Today's the panel talk is the move to collaborative protection profile. And before we start it, for everybody's benefit, let's establish our methodology. Collaborative protection profiles is a type of the standard protection profile originally developed by NIAP, which follows a different methodology. We will be discussing standard protection profiles or NIAP protection profiles, collaborative protection profiles, and EL style or classical evaluations. The differences between them are numerous, and hopefully we'll touch some of them. Today on our panel, we have Alan Key. He is responsible for Fortinet Common Criterion FIP certification projects. He has numerous experience with certification project and been a product manager for Fortinet for FortiMail and recorded and voice product lines. We have Andy Nissen. Andy is a program manager in the McAfee Product Certification Group, responsible for ensuring a portfolio of products that have that requires FIPS Common Criteria certification and NIAP APL. Andy has been involved with international technical communities working on network device collaborative protection profile. We have Leah Kuhl with us. Leah Kuhl is a senior security evaluation at Brightside. Leah performed various common criteria evaluations from EL2 to EL7 under multiple European schemes. His experience is in embedded systems, payment terminals, and HSMs. He is actively participates in European point of interaction common criteria work groups, balancing high security and quality time to market. And we have Tony Boswell. He is working with IT security since 1987, and his work spanned numerous security development evaluations. I'm on long list of achievements. He is also one of the key members behind getting NDCPP protection profiles, and he's an editorial team for NDCPP version 2, which was released previously. So let's get started today. And the first question I want everybody to ask, answer on round robin. So let's start. NIAP evolution that brought us standard protection profiles was first announced in 2009. Before that, there was numerous announcements, and we were told that we were going to move. But finally, it was implemented in 2011, where the goal, and I'm quoted, achievable, repeatable, and testable evaluation results. Now it's more than 5 years later, and we have collaborative protection and standard protection profiles. Are any of those evaluations, according to those protection profile, meeting those goals? Okay, go ahead.
So I would say yes, probably the CPP profiles, the CPP profiles that preceded them. Are generally repeatable, testable. But you can say the same thing about, I think that you can say the same thing for both. AL is repeatable. Is it testable? NDP is definitely repeatable, but they both have pros and cons. Even with the NDP and CPP, you still get into issues with the scheme and stuff like that, where like equivalency, anyone can do it, you get equivalency arguments between one scheme looks at it this way, the scheme looks at it this way. If you want to be in that PCL, you have to look at it potentially in a different way. So I think probably the answer is yes. I think it's the best CPP is trying to achieve those goals, but I still think it's similar to the experience.
Yes. I mean, I think the same thing. Look, basically, I'd say yes, we have achieved the achievable, repeatable, testable idea. And to me, the important thing about the difference was did we get to something where you know there was a lot of discussion about leaving EALs behind because of this feeling that numbers, higher numbers, were sort of obviously better because it's that direction, but actually what we were trying to do was do appropriate assurance, not to numerically increase according to a generic pattern of study and analysis, but to actually identify and focus on specific technology-specific test activities. And in many ways, I think that's the more important thing that we've done. Um, And I also agree it's not perfect. The funny thing about this is everybody knows when you think that you can't wait for perfect. So we did. You have to set something down, and the important thing therefore is that you have a mechanism for improving. And that's the other thing I think we've seen. We've got the second versions, we've got interpretation teams running, we've got examples of feedback that show that no one party is dominating this. One of the questions we had in the session just before was, if you get 15 developers in a room for a CPP, how do you stop it all sinking down to the lowest common denominator and all those 15 vendors getting an easy ride? Well, the answer to that is, it's not just those 15 vendors in the room. I mean, actually, it turns out a lot of vendors don't want to sink to the bottom anyway, because marketing that you achieved the lowest possible hurdle isn't always the best thing you want to do. So I think there are those things. There's the achievable people test, but there's a chunk more that we need to do.
I think for the lower levels, this kind of methodology is indeed something that can work. That works because the testing is defined inside the CPPs, and also the testing, different testing will not be really needed in the near future. What you see in higher levels is that to be state of the art, in the world is changing, new types of attacks coming, all have to be analyzed. Because the world is changing, suddenly the PP must change because you want to have additional testing. So for higher levels, this will be a more difficult task to do, or you really need a lot of different versions, quick versions to get better, to get your PP state of the art. But for lower levels, this can work because the type of attacks will not change.
So I'll get back to a little bit about what Tony was talking about. For the most part, I think we have accomplished or have made great strides towards reaching more customer people. If you look at readability, there's a lot of security functionality that we really like to include in PTs or at least take a look at that really does not lend itself to an objective testable. Methodology. One of the big discussions that we had is about clearing perfect keys and how to go about doing that. And that was quite contentious because there's IP issues that are involved, it's complicated, and it's a broad subject. And so there are some of these pieces of security functionality that the only way we can really include them is by documentation. And when you start taking a look at documentation and things like that, it can tend to be subjective and depend on the viewer that you get. When you look at the achievable, there's only a small set of PPs that are in existence today. And unfortunately, they don't necessarily cover all of the products or all of the architectures that we have that we'd like to validate. Virtualization, for example, at this point, or we're looking at enterprise management of products, and those aren't really well covered. And so, overall, we made great strides and accomplished some of the intent of the switch over from EL to PP based evaluations. There's still a lot of room for improvement, and there's a lot of pain points. Development of this stuff is slow, it takes a long time. And unfortunately, that means that a lot of our products are kind of in limbo right now as to how we get them to receive evaluation.
Thank you. Tony brought something up which I want to follow up on. You mentioned that in the collaborative protection profile, it is clear that we're making progress and improving. So I want to build up on that. Is this unique to collaborative protection profiles, or is it true for all forms of common criteria? And if so, if the rate of improvement is sufficient to keep up with the technological advances, and which method is better suited for that?
Wow.
We can go whichever way you want to.
So I would report that. So we use security appliances. So put a nail behind 40 and you probably make it. So firewalls, antivirus, and just spend it on web screen. So in the HTTP world, basically all of our products apply. We're not doing most of them. It's just base HTTP for our flagship product, 4840 US product. Then you're looking at IPS, VPN, and firewall package. But correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're in the firewall space, I don't think there are any applicable email security protection profiles anymore. I mean, there's not really
firewalls.
No, if you have EAL base, there aren't any PPs anymore, right? So if you're doing it like we're doing EALs and stuff like that for Europe as we need to, and you're back to the kind of the old make up what you claim what you want because there's no rules for what to claim. There's no PPs available, so we claim our major functionality and we evaluate it.
So yeah, I don't think there's any reason to believe that CPPs are unique in being able to improve. I mean, I don't think that's true. But I think it's some of the things we do when we build CPPs that make them more likely to improve. And because we build in process and we build in mechanisms. So with the CPPs, so it's not really the CPP, it's the ITC, it's the International Technical Community that produces it. With that, we have the process for versioning. We have an ongoing versioning process. We're looking at a major minor versioning process to try and get more timely updates for more clearly specified things, as opposed to the large things like introducing virtualization. We have mechanisms for doing interpretations, which is another important thing, because some of your improvements come out of having the feedback from individual evaluations. If you have an interpretation process, you get to hear about that, and you get to work out solutions. If you don't, a lot of these things just get lost in general evaluation experience. And the other thing is we have a community, and that means that developers, labs, certifiers and validators all get to share some of their experience and frustrations, and that's part of the way that things improve, because you realise it's not just you, everybody wants to do this thing. And the final thing I think I would note is, again, part of this, because I don't see this as using the high assurance compared to these PPs. I don't see it as a high assurance versus, as I characterise it somewhere else, versus strong specification. I think it's about making sure we get appropriate specific detail in these PPs. And when you put the detail in, there's things for people to actually comment on. People get to say, no, I think that's wrong, or it doesn't apply in this case. And if you just put in generalizations, if you just put in general properties, that doesn't always happen. Once again, it gets lost in the individual evaluations. So I think there's a number of things it's not that we're doing CPPs, it's the way we do those that enables them to improve or to have better chances of improving in the directions people want.
Then I have a question to you, because the seems that now we get all the processes and all the tests inside the PP. And also where you're saying that you want to update them regularly. So you have developers that are building up the products, and during the process of development their PP is changing, so their requirements are changing. What you also then get is that you bring a lot of effort to a working group, and which probably is that effort there. We already have a problem with the shortage of PPs at this moment. So probably you get something, you bring a lot of work to your table, which you don't really have the effort. And I think the expertise is with the knowledge, it's with the lab, also the experience of hacking, of thinking about security is about with the people that really having their hands on the product. So in the original tool situation, you will have the fact that the actual experts are also having their hands on. And now you bring the security analysis much more to a huge community which should come together, should discuss things together, and probably there is not really, people are not available.
All right.
Yeah, so I guess there's two things that I would say there. The first one you're talking about, when we do updates to PPs, or as we make improvements, developers now have what could be looking like a moving target. One of the ways we've tried to address that is through a very independent process. Tony and I both are on the network device implementation team. And so we develop some processes that try to make the transition of the environments a little bit easier on developers so they have more consistent view of the world. One of the ways we do that is that we make interpretations where we modify the requirements that is exposed to the community before it becomes official. And make a recommendation that the schemes don't necessarily have to enforce the word. Don't make it mandatory for any period of time, even once it comes up. So keep kind of asking for a warning. Also, the new versions of the CDP, that was telegraphed for a long time before it came out. So people kind of knew what was to be expected and how that would go. Did touch on a very important piece, and that is just bandwidth. One of the problems that we struggle with nightly is getting people to do some of the more boring work, or some of the grunt work, right? Just take a look at what the editorial team went through for version 2. Really spent a lot of time and effort, and they did a very good job. It was a small group of people, and it was a lot of work taking a look at the enterprise interpretation team. It's a lot of work. We meet once a week and we discuss stuff. We have to go through a lot of the technical details and go back to our various organizations and try to get some clarity. And then we have to write stuff up and we have to put it out. And with that being more involved, without being more hands-on, the process would be very difficult to continue. There are holes in the piece. There are places where we can really use extended patches in the long term, but extensions to the existing PPs to cover more product functionality. But that's going to need experts. That's going to need people to get on the top.
Okay, thank you, Andy. I think it's a very well set point that this improvement process depends on participation. And that's for international technical community. All of this participation is voluntarily. Let's discuss now value. Now, this might be a controversial topic. You might ask, what's the value? But what is the value do you think users gain from Common Criteria certified product? And specifically, do EL, if EL certification or collaborative protection profile certification offer better value? And please keep in mind original definition of goals, achievable, repeatable, testable.
So I have a pretty pragmatic answer to this one, which may not be overwhelmed some people. As far as I know, it's EAL or CPP-based evaluations. The one thing that a customer can get out of a company being able to complete it is the vendor is big enough, mature enough, has the resources and the money to get through it. And that's really, and that in itself is an indication of something. It's not a fly-by-night company, they've been around for a while, they've got some processes, whether it's an EAL-based based evaluation or not. To get through an NDCP evaluation, you have to have a process, and you just need to visually. So, and we've kind of talked about this as well. I mean, it is very lowest common denominator. Like with CPP, if you're not a firewall, or something, I must admit, I'm not terribly familiar with some of that. In my space, if you're talking about more traditional network devices, network areas, so centralized management, automating, web proxy firewalls, these kind of things, if you're not a traditional firewall, then you're going after the base NDP package, which is automated logging and a bit of crypto, and clean, talk to the neighbors, that's basically required. But there's still some value in it. I mean, the customer's seeing that the company can get through, and they can meet the requirements, and they can get through. But if you're choosing whether the product, the firewall product, is the best product in the company based on the sort of CC, whether it's email or MVP, that's probably not going to tell you.
So in that case, you would preferably go with the dual versions and then choose your own set of requirements. And in that way, you have something that really fits the product.
Well, I was kind of joking with you, but it's really that maybe we should follow the UKCPA approach, right? We should start with NDCP, you start adding FIPS, and then you add on a bunch of extra stuff and process and stuff, because that's basically what CPA is. But I don't think that's fun. I didn't say that.
I was just going to write it down, actually. I can see a new scheme. So in terms of value, I think this is the thing I find most difficult, because I really want the answer to just be a simple yes. The reason I don't feel I can quite say that is because we don't have enough end user participation at the moment. This to me is the contrast. We've done a lot of things that are similar to the smart car community, and we had another presentation in here earlier about sort of how that worked. And one of the things we had in that smart car community was the financial providers, and they're still there, actively participating. And having that end user point of view is invaluable in helping you to make the right trade-offs. When you come to talk about an evaluation activity and you want to know, is it worth spending this much time testing compared to the value that the end user, the customer, is going to get out of it? We can take reasonable guesses, but without somebody who owns the risk there, it becomes harder to do it. So I think this is one of the things that we're still on a quest to improve, is getting that real world final perspective. So I think the answer to the question is yes. I think the value is getting through, but at the moment it's having to come through proxies in sort of schemes and the sort of the customer stories from developers.
Yeah, so I'd say that there is value. I think, except for in certain industries like the smart home industry, I don't think that the end users really understand what they're getting or what it means. They don't have to love the sophistication that we do, because we deal with it. When a customer gets told by their procurement officer, by procurement regulations, that they must have CC, we get a number of every possible diagnosis, what that actually means, what we're supposed to be doing. We take a look at a detailed evaluation, actually means the ST, and analyzes it, figures out what does that actually mean. They don't like anything, they're doing the check. We take a look at the PP evaluations. You know, the similar thing kind of rules. Most procurement officers, I guess, most procurement people, I guess, have no clues the difference between the NDCPP and the firewall CPP. And so they are just following orders, as it were. I don't think they have the time, and I don't think they really care to invest in trying to make the requirements better. Except for like the schemes that are involved, this is their day-to-day operations. Most of the people that are trying to do their day job, and it's a lot of effort, and I'm not sure that they get a whole lot of value. I will say that the CPP is good because it kind of does set a baseline. Right now, KS24 network devices is pretty open. It's pretty low, but part of that is trying to be able to cover as many products as we can in a realistic manner. We are looking at just administration, good administration broadly, and types of things, we have very different effects and issues that we need to address. So it's not that everybody's not hard on the end, but you know, it's difficult to get vendors to come in and say, hey, this piece of functionality, our customers really care that it's really good. They all, because the customers don't know that they care.
Thank you. There's a lot to be said about the common criteria being a checkbox, but that view is somewhat cynical. We hope that at some point somebody of that list of the vendors and the clients read what we write and what we do. But that charge can be equally applied against EL, high EL evaluations and collaborative protection profiles. This is not unique to either of those. But one point that's as important, I think, is that upgrading and maintaining collaborative protection profile, running of the international technical community, takes a lot of volunteering from a very specific subject matter experts. With a collaborative protection profile approach, we want to have a protection profile for specific technologies. So could we have enough volunteers to develop and maintain a comprehensive set of collaborative protection profile, or is it going to be NDCP and a couple more and that's it?
So I'm going to understand that guilty is charged for the result of just creating an NDC, so I'm going to abstain from answering this question.
So one of the things, the bandwidth problem is there, and I don't know, maybe one of the problems is we call it holding zero, and I think we called it that with a slightly humorous twist when we started off, because it isn't really about volunteering, it's about getting something back. I mean, it's absolutely true, of course, that you do this in addition to your day job as itself. You know, most people join the calls, they may take on some writing or editing responsibilities, join a subgroup and contribute that way. And at first, this is just sort of time you have to make. I think the slightly more serious thing is that in common criteria, I mean, I think we know we are world's lost complainers. And the funny thing is that you don't get to fix complaints without actually putting in a bit of effort to change it. So that's the slightly more brutal way of doing this. I mean, we knew we were moving from a world where people were complaining a lot and they were right to complain. So how did we imagine we were going to get to the improved world without actually putting in some effort? That brutally is where we are. And people are stepping up to the mark. I mean, I'm at the risk of making a mutual admiration society, I mean, you know, Andy does a whole lot of work, which I hope isn't just pro bono work. I mean, it feels like an investment. You might.
Yeah.
Okay, you can come back with that.
Come on, you
can. So I think this is the thing. It does require more than we get, but we are getting people stepping up to the mark as we go. There was an earlier presentation about some of the JAS documents for smart cars that was looking and making you think, yeah, when we started, we were looking at one document. We produced one document, and it was in one area that we saw that we needed. There's roughly six of those documents now, all in areas that have come up as we went. We didn't start off with a master plan to do those six documents. That came out of it, and as we went, more people said, well, that issue's important to me, so I joined. I'll write something, a few pages, and mostly it is that. So I think some of this is just that we are trying to change the way people look at PPTV written, and we're changing it from the idea that somebody gives you a PP and the hard work is then combined to it, to the idea that the hard work is split between combined to it, but actually that should become easier if you participate in writing it. So I think we do have a bandwidth problem. The reason I'm not a total pessimist about it is because I think we see how this can improve.
So you put a lot of effort in writing these PPs and creating the best descriptions you want to have. The question is whether in the end you will gain this time back in the actual versions. And there you can put question marks because still you have to do the test, still you have to do the analysis, still you have to do you have to understand the product. So you put a lot of effort probably to get more consistency from a testing point of view between labs, but probably not from the fact that you actually ask more time from everyone to get these evaluations done. But let me explain a little bit. We have also involved in payments terminal evaluations, and there we have one PP, which is a nice PP, a young PP. Lots of discussions went on there, but at this moment we have a user community that comes once, three times a year, comes together, and they discuss together with the scheme what is the standard on how to evaluate this. And we have discussions on how to do the code review, we have discussions on how to do a certain, we have a whole attack list that we maintain together. And in that way, we have a much more flexible way in being able to make one community out of what we do. And if you put everything in CDP, then suddenly the requirements change. And that's not the case if you have your fashion paper review.
So I wrote some of that as well, and funnily enough, I mean, it was an impact. That's the PP that I hold up as the example of just how complex stuff can get. And in that, it's an interesting thing because I think I would hope that actually that they're it has a slightly different group because it comes from the payment organisations and having to be consistent with what the PCI is. So I think the routine for improving is different there because it's not just up to that payment terminal community either. It has to take out the PCI of the comments because it has to stay consistent. I think that's what I meant earlier by saying I don't think CPP is the only model for improving them, but I don't think what you cited about the JSON and payment terminal one, where there's a separate attack list document that needs to maintain by a smaller community in a slightly different way, I don't think that disproves the CPP point of view. Because there, the people who would otherwise be involved in that community don't actually have the say over what should be in the performance in the same discussion way. It's back to conforming to PCI.
Yeah, so from a requirement, so the functional requirements is clear, so that you should comply to the functional requirements. But from the assurance point of view, and that's what of course ends up in the CPP as well, how much assurance do we want to gain? That is based on one hand, of course, on the assurance requirements that are defined in the PP, and on the other hand, to have the community together, what kind of attacks should you consider? What kind of code review should you do? And make in that way the common way of dealing with the PP. And at this moment, we see from an evaluation point of view that it goes rather fast. You become experienced, you really gain a lot of time, and you can do it in a matter of time.
And that's built nicely to the next question I want to discuss, and we're going to start with Andy this time in answering it. So traditionally, common criteria in the EL style focuses on both assurance and functional requirements. Assurance requirements looks at how you do things. Functional requirements looks at how you implement things. Standard collaborative protection profiles largely focus on functional requirement to detriment of assurance requirement with minimal process oversight. Do you view this move as a welcoming streamlining of loss of valuable evaluation oversight?
So I think there's value in insurance activities going through taking a look at how things are done. The problem that we run into is that they end up with a lot of documentation and then you have outside entities telling you how you would be developing stuff and putting requirements on your development environment. Various other management styles of the product. It ended up being projects, a lot of the projects that we've involved with, a lot of the insurance activities that we did were essentially taking that that we had sitting on the shelf, changing the name of the product that was listed there, maybe changing the version number and even the site moved it out. I'm not sure that that's a good use of anybody's time. And so some of the insurance activities make sense, and maybe I'm speaking from the perspective of an organization that has good processes and things that turn loosely, but they fit within the model of CC, and so potentially it has some value for other organizations, but in a lot of cases I'm not sure we have a whole lot. Jumping back real quick, one of the interesting things about the wholesale PP and other smart cards that you mentioned, in both of those cases, you're dealing with a very small, homogenous set of players. One of the things that's troubled with the CPPs is that they're kind of a whole lot larger emphasis on that. So that is one thing that makes it a little bit difficult to compare the value for the methodologies
that we use. Oh, to what you say, that sometimes make evidence or documentation just to get through the formal activity. In human criteria, the assurance requirements, especially in the design, the PS and the EV part, it's to understand how the device works. And that should be the main goal. And based on that, you should find a way how to get the formal part, but the understanding of it, that's the actual goal to do next, and in the end, to make a proper vulnerability analysis.
So I'm not sure that any documentation I've ever seen would really help somebody understand how the product is actually working. Large complex system, you can go through and unless you're very detailed about how it works, you're not going to go into a lot of time and effort to understand it. I'm not sure they learned much, and to get through this, because it was not repeatable, they have to go and have a subjective analysis of it. You dumb down the interface such that it would meet the requirements of CC and find the property. Nothing important, but it's really kind of the system, but we just want to get the first day of perspective that we wouldn't otherwise do. So I'm not sure that the architectural description that we have is always that useful.
Yeah, so on top of that, what we normally do is going to the vendor and ensuring that we have workshops together and to make sure a discussion with the vendor, developer, to the developer and the developer both have a common understanding on how the device works. And that gives a lot of, gains a lot of problems on both parties. On one hand, what should be provided, on the other hand, what is actually doing or how does it work? And I think in many implementations, probably also in CPPs, or there we have a lot of formalism and documentation, which actually doesn't really make sense in the way it is provided. And in that way, it's just the goal is not met, and a waste of time.
Yeah, that's totally second thing you're saying. There's, I mean, the design documentation he produces, it's at the black box of architecture level, like on the HL, more abstract than the HL. I think it provides some value. What are the interfaces? What are you talking to about? So that's the kind of stuff that typically is in your normal documentation anyway, because the average IT guy wants to know that. That's useful. But when you get to like designing on the internals and stuff like that, working your, trying to draw pictures of how the internals of a complex product, it just doesn't work. And the way that the AL standards are written, there are ways that you can work on documentation to drastically simplify things and make your life easier, which is kind of the default of doing it with you in the first place, but it gets you the certification that I don't know. So, if you're going to, one of the I would say there's aspects of the AL that does make sense. I mean, like, the process stuff, do you have a bug review process? You know, that kind of life cycle stuff, that's kind of useful. It's fairly easy to document, it's fairly easy to maintain. You've kind of got that stuff anyway. But one of the things that's probably fairly useful in the AL side of things is source code reviews, right? If you want to know a product works, you need to have an eligible validator, and you need to go look at source code. But then you get a problem like 40OS, I think, is north of 6 million lines of code these days.
That's small.
Yeah, so, and yeah, so it may be small, but it's still pretty big. So there's no way, heck, you can have a validator cover all that. So doing a representative sampling testing, maybe that provides something. Or we look at, like, you know, really low-hanging fruit. Are you doing stack protection? Are you doing this kind of stuff? Which is, again, to bring up CPA a lot. That's some of the stuff the CPA is kind of getting at, which is like, are you at least doing the low-hanging fruit of internal security coding best practices and guidelines? And that's pretty useful. And I think that'd be much more useful for a customer to be able to see that, you know, yeah, we're doing all these basic things that, you know, your basic student coming out of 14 universities that do the things you're supposed to do.
So it kind of depends also on the type of product you have. If you have a product that is overly complex or really complex, then you fight for your evaluation is not doable.
Sure, but there's no distinction with CC whether you've got a product that's like 100,000 lines of code or something that's 6 million lines of code. It's the same thing applies. So where, how do you make that distinction? There is no distinction today.
Yeah, code reviews are a non-starter. I have a question for value. The problem that you're dealing with is, you mentioned 6 million lines. I work on a product that had upwards of 13 million, but given not all of that was overcome. But in the code base, we have about 13 million, 15 million lines of code. We had code reviewers come in, and for CC, they're looking at specific pieces of security functionality. We were looking at other lines of code where we were actually implementing that particular piece, and they were looking at all the surrounding code and all the call chain and stuff like that. I've been recently involved in a project that had that made changes in the order of 2,800 lines of code, somewhere around there. So we're not using something that's reasonably small. This went through code reviews by a number of different developers, people that are focused specifically on coding on a day-to-day basis. And it would be a little bit shameful to mention the number of issues that offense. Reviewing code manually is not an easy process for people that are good at it. It takes them a lot of time and a lot of effort for anything to be on something that's anywhere near not true. I do think documenting some of the code development process in time is something useful. The question would become, what's the bar? How do you say this is acceptable, this is not acceptable? What is the standard that you can use? And by picking a standard, you're saying hell shallow. And so you come to these few waterfall, and now the development standard this year is agile. Real well together. And there's ways you can kind of time them better. They're very different. It's one acceptable, the other not. So I mean, I think there is some value in documenting some of these processes. I think it's very easy to do questions about the repeatable test process. You know, how do you know that somebody's actually following what you talked to, what they documented? Any number of places people can go over the documentation that people have done, and it might be accurate at one point in time, but are people still following?
Okay. I think we should move to our last question, because I want to give our audience opportunity to ask us questions. And the last question may be somewhat controversial, but in my opinion, quality of traditional EL style evaluations largely depend on the quality of scheme oversight. Is the same holds for standard protection profiles and collaborative protection profiles? Or do assurance activity establish sufficient baseline?
So I think I'm going to say quickly, I think they should do. And I think part of the point about this is we came to a realization in a number of areas, and I think payment, smart cards, payment terminals were is that it's actually quite important how much understanding and knowledge you had at in the certification level as well as the evaluation level. And one of the things that having the explicit evaluation activities helps is to identify that, helps everybody to prepare properly for it and to know when they've done it. It leaves fewer subjective questions, fewer places for sort of, oh, well, we didn't really know we were supposed to do that sort of thing, so we stopped. So I think at that level, it makes it easier to compare, easier to get consistency, easier to pass around, dare I say it, knowledge within a scheme, within a certification body. So I think yes. Which way do you want to go now?
In general, yes, but I mean, it's still, the different schemes still have their peculiarities about things that they think are very important. So it's much less than it used to be in the EAL days, but there are still some idiosyncrasies between the different schemes where you've got to realize that they're going to do things. But it's nowhere near as bad as it used to be.
I think that vulnerability is always on a place where you don't expect it, and or where the evaluator probably expects it, but where the developer doesn't expect it. It's about this thinking out of the box, using a product in a way you should not use it. And I think the CPPs helps you to define such tests, but there is of course a risk there that exactly at the place where you don't expect it, it's not tested. And therefore there is always the problem that the quality of the evaluator is really a major player in whether the evaluation was properly done or not.
I think that's really important, because I sort of tend to agree, but not completely. I think some vulnerabilities, it turns out, are in exactly the place you expect them to be. And some of them are in exactly the place that the developer should have expected them to be. And that's why so many simple hacks get done even on evaluated products. So I think I still agree with you. There are chances to find things by thinking out of the box. It works particularly well in areas like smart cards and but there are a whole base of products where we would make an improvement just by making sure the basics were right. And this comes back to some of the things that we were saying about putting into the UK, the CPA security characteristics, some of the things we're trying to get into the new CPP updates. It's things like, we know we really should be having ASLR, debt, heat protection system. We should have a number of those things. And arguably, that would make more contribution to the actual experience of anybody getting hacked. And so that's my only issue with what you say, is that there's a whole lot of stuff we should maybe improve first. And we're not doing that well, or we haven't historically been doing that well.
Andy?
So you kind of touch on one thing, some of the technologies that you mentioned kind of apply in the face of the mantra. They aren't necessarily testable, they're not necessarily repeatable, they're not necessarily achievable, or technically.
No, something that
is not achievable, I'm pretty sure they are.
To Cousins and some of his wish lists, there are technical reasons why we don't do some of those today, or we haven't transitioned to them. They take time, they take a lot of effort, there's that, so yeah, no issues. I tend to agree that there are a lot of places where if we get away from the mantra, we could probably improve what CC is doing. But some of that we get away from the people. In the sense that, more puzzling or more taking a look at what people are doing. Some of the testing that we're doing is particularly useful in the sense that we are testing, the vendors are using the same code base. I know that a large portion of people in here are using OpenSSH, and going through and doing a lot of the same testing on that isn't necessarily a useful time. The problem is when you start getting into some of these other alternative technologies or some of these other areas, it will drive up the cost of certifications and it will make them very unpredictable for lack of a better term. A lot of them are difficult technologically because they have a large amount of sophistication. You also end up in a case where I'm not know, get people inside the center. And so that kind of makes it difficult for us to move beyond the paradigm that we have today. Because there is a direct cause for rest.
Okay, thank you. I will take the questions from the audience. Anybody has any questions? Okay, go. Okay, let's start with an easy question.
Okay. John Anderson from Citrix. So it's a question and also an ask. So we're part of the CPP community. I've participated with the MDF, the Mobile Device Fundamental and Related Profiles, and also Chris Mayer's participated with the NDCPP. And one of the things that I think is a challenge as a vendor is it's never going to be just that. There's a whole ecosystem, right? Just for NetScaler, we've got FIPS, we've got NDPP assurance maintenance, we've got NDCPP, we've got FedRAMP. We're doing them all at the same time. What I would like to see is more consideration to coordinating those things in the development and revving of the standards, rather than just thinking, well, what would be the ideal thing at this moment that this requirement should be, you know, and just focusing on that one piece. So how can we improve that? And that's also an ask.
Several people on the U.S. side alluded to this week. We got, you know, why are we not going to get some 40-3? Well, the administration keeps changing, you know, we can sign it off, right? I mean, it's hard enough to try to get, I mean, they don't remember like 5, 6, 8 years ago. I mean, I was on a phone call with the previous leader of NIAP, and I asked them when they were developing the APP profiles, like, and the drafts came out, and it had all that explicit stuff about crypto in there. It's like, why are you not simply just referencing FIPS 140-1 or -2 is required? And the answer was, we don't trust that this knows what they're talking about. So clearly, things have changed since then, which is good. But I think, I really don't think it's reasonable to expect that we can, you know, how can all these organizations go to the same page? I mean, that's just like, I think it would take 5 years to get in the same room. Yeah. I don't know how you do it. I think it's just kind of a job security. It's a fact of life. Things are going to get better, I think. I mean, there's an IAP. This kind of, this is good. But I think it's wishful thinking to think that anytime soon we're going to start seeing really, you know, intelligent merging of requirements. Because you can see that NDPP was going to, NDCPP were the way of the future. But we have a worldwide split between what governments and countries and schemes want to see. And then on top of that, you've got, you know, NDCP is just the starting point. If you've got to do all these things. So even within the U.S., it's not standard. And then there's CPA, there's ACE in Australia. Every country still wants to have their own little flavor of things. So I think things are better than they used to be, but they're also, they can get a lot worse too. So I think that's not an answer, but.
I'm a little bit more optimistic. I mean, I think you see, at least in the U.S., there is some push to try and standardize the regulations and make sure things are a little bit more obvious. One of the issues that we deal with that you kind of touched on is that this is a match. Not everybody recognizes personal information. We have to write some of these PPs and some of these regulations in a more of the generic way. On the other hand, on the pessimistic side, I think we touched on this as well. Sometimes even the US government can't agree with each other about who
is for things that happen within a nation, within a city, and it's not unique to any one nation. And you know, we see this in the UK. There's a whole process there that has to align. And you know, for what it's worth, most of the time I see that when you point things out to people, they actually start trying to align. The mechanics of how you do that on large, unwieldy documents are sometimes difficult, but it does happen over time. So I think some of it is to point out inconsistencies where you see them. I think some of the other things that we're trying to do are actually put the explicit evaluation activities in a way that can make clear that, independent of whether this is a document that has to belong to a nation, if we can talk about the activity and whether that's sufficient, if we can then harmonise on it, then we're steps closer to how we actually demonstrate what we accept as proof of that. I would make no bones about that being a difficult step to, you know, if you're within CC to accept a PIPS certificate, is something that there are differing views.
Okay, thank you, Don. Let's give it a chance. The last question of the talk.
So, I was just going to ask about, if you will, the transition to CPP. What you do when there is no PP that suits your product? And you know, at the moment we have, I think NIAP has kind of made a, maybe it's a political gesture that they're not accepting anything that's not a protection profile. So that leaves you with something very generic. We have like a generic software app and a couple of other handful of generic parts. And can you really say that that's better than that a generic PP is actually better than a EL2 or EL4 that's more targeted towards a product?
I think I'll paraphrase this question for brevity. Is generic ill-fitting protection profile claim better than the EL?
So, you have something like procurement requirements of the customer.
Two dodges.
So, yeah, I guess it's kind of a dodge, but it's really, frankly, the absolute truth. I mean, in the U.S., it's not necessarily a political thing. There is a regulation, CSS P11, and it says that it has to be on PCL, and I have also made notes that only PP evaluated products go on PCL. You know, there's also FISMA and FAR that it kind of provided that the rest of the government should be following that as well. There are other nations that are more accepting of EL evaluations. And so it gets back to our, is this a check mark? And you know, in some respects, it is, for better or for worse. But at the end of the day, at least from my perspective as a vendor, it's really about whether I can sell a product. You know, getting this certified is expensive. It's time consuming. You know, part of the reason I volunteered, you know, volunteered for this stuff, is that my time is worth less than a developer's time. You know, in general, we're trying to make sure that we can get products through easily, so that at the end of the day, a customer that says, do you have CC, do you have a EL, do you have a PP evaluation, we can say yes. And so that we can go to the next step of implementing our products that are based on your.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, so thank you very much for your participation. It was very nice to hear your opinions.